How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate the public on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, like today, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. So my guest today on the show is Scott Weissman. He is a trailblazing genetic counselor who's recently starting his own independent practice, Chicago Genetic Consultants. He has previously been a genetic counselor at GeneDx and North Shore University Health System. Scott has received the Strategic Leader Award from the National Society of Genetic Counselors for working on multiple projects related to Medicare guidelines for cancer genetic testing, publishing genetic counseling and testing vignettes in the journal Community Oncology, and the United States Preventative Service Task Force, BRCA, genetic counseling guidelines. Scott is currently a clinical faculty member at the Northwestern University Graduate Program in Genetic Counseling and a senior genetic counselor at Aura Healthcare. It's fantastic to have you on the show, Scott. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Kara. I really appreciate it. Appreciate the invite.
Definitely. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about genetic counseling and you having your own private practice. So why don't we just make sure that all of our listeners know what genetic counseling is?
Absolutely. So, you know, genetic counseling is the process of talking with patients, whether it's a couple looking to start a family, individuals coming in to assess their risk for neurologic conditions, cardiac disease, cancer, and talking about what's going on in their family to give them a good sense of whether or not there may be any genetic risk for disease. So a lot of the time is spent gathering family history, talking about their personal history, and then explaining to them kind of what's involved with genetics for whatever condition it is, and what's genetic testing, and how it's done, and how it really can benefit them and their family to better identify risk. And during that process, also making sure that we're kind of gauging how the information might impact them emotionally and psychologically. So a lot of different areas right now for genetic counseling. So it's a great time to be in the field.
And genetic counselors kind of help be the translator between this dense genetic language and just kind of how much layman people can understand. You've had a lot of experience in genetic counseling and being in the field for a while. What has inspired you to start your own practice and kind of go out on a limb on your own?
So with my time at GeneDx, where I was a customer service genetic counselor, so I would take calls from physicians that really didn't have access to a genetics provider and really wanted to be able to help their patient, but they really weren't sure exactly what test to order. They really weren't sure how to interpret the test results. And I got these calls from really all over the country. So I felt like there was really a strong need to go out and start a practice that allows people to have access to genetic providers that really that need it. And you know, with one of the changes in healthcare where you see a lot of these large conglomerate healthcare systems, you have situations where private practice physicians don't always want to refer to the larger health systems because they're afraid of not getting their patients back. So part of my goal is really to work with community physicians to increase access to patients who really need genetic services.
And I assume that they kind of help bring in these patients to your office to kind of get the word of genetic counseling out and specifically your practice.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that there's actually kind of two prongs to my approach. I've been working with local physicians, and then I've also been reaching out to physicians in different states and providing telemedicine. So doing genetic counseling through web portals to allow people to, again, have access, but even have access in their own home, which is really, I think, a huge benefit, and the patients really seem to appreciate it.
And that's been kind of a newer area in genetic counseling of kind of having sessions through the internet or through the phone. How do you feel that that's different than in person? Obviously there's pros and cons to each side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, personally, I feel like the video aspect of it very much is pretty identical to in-person counseling because you're able to see the patient. You're really able to read body language, read facial expressions. Doing telephonic counseling, which I've done, really you don't have any of those visual cues. And as a genetic counselor, it really kind of changes your counseling a little bit, where, not in a bad way, where you just need to ask more maybe detailed questions about how the patient is feeling or responding to something. I'm personally a little bit more of a visual learner, so I like to be able to see people and how they're responding. Also, again, as a genetic counselor, I think you want to really make sure that people are kind of engaged with the information. And I don't think you can really tell that as much when you're talking to somebody over the phone by seeing them in person.
True. The body language is very key, especially when you're trying to identify like how much a patient is understanding or how they feel about a certain situation, if they're apprehensive to go for that genetic testing or go for something else that they're talking to you about.
Exactly. And that idea of the comprehension is obviously key to what we do. And when you're talking to somebody on the phone and they say, well, I'm gardening right now, or you can hear that they're clearly driving, you just kind of know that you don't always have their full attention. And that always kind of has concerns for me in terms of how much are they really understanding about what we're discussing.
So you have some patients that come to you through referrals of medical professionals, such as primary care physicians. But do you ever have patients find you on their own, that they've kind of heard about genetic counseling and maybe they have a family history of something, or they're looking to have children, or in one of those situations, do you have patients kind of just finding you on their own?
Absolutely. So, obviously with the internet, people have type in a variety of different search functions, and I have people that call me that have done their own genetic testing through a direct-to-consumer company, or that they had genetic testing through their provider and the provider really isn't completely sure how to interpret the results and they don't really know how to refer them to. So I get a lot of self-referrals that I didn't always see when I was working for a large academic center.
Now, are there requirements to book an appointment with you? Do they need to have a family history of something? Do they need to have a certain positive genetic test? What do they need to have in order to book this appointment?
So for most patients that I work with, really it's can be either that they are interested in testing for a specific condition, or that they've done, like I said, they've done their own genetic testing already. The one area that I really don't tend to get involved with is people that have done ancestry testing, because really my focus has always been more health related issues, and it's just not an area that I know a lot about and feel comfortable with. But I'll see patients kind of across the board for most medical conditions.
Now, one topic that we've kind of danced around a little bit is direct consumer genetic tests, and this is kind of a newer field that's popped up in the genetic testing world, but also it kind of falls into genetic counseling. Companies like 23andMe, Color Genomics, Counselor, a couple of the different ones that are providing these direct consumer genetic tests where you don't need a physician to actually order it for you. Patient or people can just go on and order it themselves. How do you feel about these? What insights do you have as to kind of how reliable are these tests? And is it kind of a good thing that they're directly available to patients?
So I think it depends. So you mentioned three specific companies there, and really two of them do provide direct to consumer in terms of counsel and color, but I believe they still have to be involved with a physician or a genetic counselor. So somebody at those companies may actually call and talk to the patient and give them some counseling prior to having the testing done. For companies like 23andMe and some of the Nutrigenomics and other companies, there really isn't any counseling that necessarily takes place. And the reason I distinguish the two is because really I think the companies that offer the counseling as part of the testing really are looking for more of your standard hereditary conditions that will come with an increased risk of something, where they're doing next generation sequencing or Sanger sequencing and actually looking for pathogenic variants in genes, where some of the other direct-to-consumer companies like 23andMe are really doing more SNP testing and not necessarily always looking at medically actionable conditions. And so for patients that are going off and doing the direct-to-consumer for the tests that have less clinically actionable conditions, you know, I feel like these are folks that are really kind of looking for an answer for some condition that they have, and they're really kind of reaching for anything that may help answer those questions. So I think for those people, it's even really more important that they talk to a genetics provider so they really understand what those results can and can't tell them.
And you mentioned that some of them have genetic counseling, and you kind of put them in two different categories. For those that do offer genetic counseling, or that's kind of built into the process for their consumers, would you say from your experience that that genetic counseling is kind of the same level of professionalism that you would find in a hospital or a private practice? Or do you think it's kind of a different category of genetic counseling?
You know, that's a really great question. I mean, most of the places that provide the genetic counseling, they're using certified genetic counselors. So, you know, I myself haven't gone through the process, but I would tend to believe that if these are folks that are trained at a site that's been accredited by the American Board of Genetic Counseling, they have their certification. I would certainly tend to believe that these folks are getting the same quality of genetics care that they would receive at being seen directly at a hospital. You know, I think some people raise the concern about potential conflict of interest with these counselors, but really, if these are patients that are seeking the testing out on their own, I don't necessarily know that there always is a conflict of interest. You know, you kind of hope that if the genetic counselor takes the family history and identifies that the family may be at risk for a condition that isn't on their test, that they would then refer the patient to a genetic counselor that could potentially get that test done in a different laboratory.
Definitely. And this is just kind of one small area of genetic counseling. There's a lot of different areas of genetic counseling, and there's kind of some main ones people think of. And then there's newer ones, or ones that are becoming bigger within the field of genetic counseling. Most counselors tend to specialize in one area, but you kind of expand out to multiple fields, having your private practice and having different types of patients come in. Why don't we talk about a few of these? One of them is cancer genetics. What is a typical patient like that comes in and you meet with regarding cancer genetics?
So the vast majority of patients that come in for the cancer genetic evaluation, typically they're coming in because of a personal or family history of breast, ovarian, or colon cancers. Those tend to be the ones that I think we see the most, and that I think most genetic counselors end up seeing, unless you really kind of subspecialize and you're working with pediatric cancers or, let's say, pancreatic cancer. And really, that tends to be because those are the most common cancers. And there's a lot of awareness, I believe, in the community about genetic testing for these conditions. Things like, you know, BRCA1 and 2, Lynch syndrome, FAP. So that tends to be kind of my bread and butter. It's something that I've been doing my entire career. And I really enjoy doing, because, like I've been talking about, these are tests and information that people can really act on and reduce their risk or to detect cancer early. But over the course of my 15 years, you've really kind of seen a subspecializing of the field, and you're seeing counselors now that really focus on, you know, cardiology. So seeing patients with cardiomyopathies or channelopathies. You see genetic counselors specializing in neurology. So working with either movement disorders, like maybe Charcot-Marie-Tooth or some ataxias, or memory disorders like Alzheimer's disease. So it's great to kind of see this branching out. And, you know, I was fortunate enough when I left school where I took a position in an adult clinic where I was able to get exposure to a lot of these areas kind of right off the bat, which was kind of new at the time.
You mentioned a couple of the neurogenetic disorders. We actually previously had someone on the show that had CMT and talked a lot about that. So it just goes to show that, you know, it's these things are maybe more common than people think. And you also mentioned cardiogenetics. What kind of goes into cardiogenetics? People that kind of aren't aware of this subfield of genetic counseling.
Sure. So that's a great question. So in terms of cardiogenetics, basically the way that my experience has led to this and what goes into it is it really kind of comes up where you have families that either are coming in because there's been kind of sudden cardiac death in the family at an early age. And so you're trying to kind of backstep to see if you can potentially identify what was possibly that cause, or you're seeing family history of early heart attacks or people that have survived their heart attacks. Other cases, you're seeing people that have had abnormal stress tests or something that's led to a diagnosis where then they're being referred for genetic evaluation, just like you know, let's say in neuro or cardio. And then I think really the role of the cardiac counselor is really to kind of take a look at what the tests are showing. So looking at the EKGs, looking at the echocardiograms, getting input from the cardiologist to think what they think may be going on in terms of the root cause of the cardiac issue. And then from there, the cardiac genetic counselor really doing the risk assessment in terms of, okay, well, what's the best test to offer? Am I looking at more of a cardiomyopathy? Am I looking at something more like, you know, long QT or Brugada? And in some cases, there's more testing going on for some of the kind of more coronary related diseases like familial hypercholesterolemia. So it's something that's really continuing to evolve more and more with time.
As we said before, like a kind of newer specialty that's really becoming a big field in genetic counseling. I'm seeing it more pop up as a student.
There's been a lot of legwork from people like Heather McLeod and Amy Sturm and Lisa De La Faith Castillo, where they really have gone out and tried to kind of bring awareness to this. And you know, I think one of the big accomplishments they've had recently is getting medical examiners to recognize the importance of potentially saving DNA in patients that die suddenly due to what may be diagnosed at autopsy as a cardiomyopathy or an unknown cause, so that families then can potentially go back and test these individuals to see if there is something genetic for as a cause of their death, which, you know, has not been going on for years.
And these are scary conditions because a lot of the times it's sudden cardiac arrest. So it's not like you've had previous signs. Maybe it could just happen, right?
Exactly. I mean, for instance, with long QT and syndrome, you know, sometimes the trigger for an event could just be sleeping or swimming, you know, things that you kind of take for granted if you do them on a regular basis. So these tend to be very severe and scary conditions for families.
Good to identify if someone does have something. Is there things that, if you've been identified with long QT syndrome, for instance, are there preventative measures you can do to lower your risk of having a cardiac arrest?
Absolutely. So for long QT, some of the things that they may consider are preventative beta blockers, or for people that potentially have a stronger family history or depending upon genotype, they may actually do a implantable defibrillator so that if somebody does have an event, they will be shocked back to a normal rhythm and avoiding potentially, you know, a sudden cardiac death.
And another area that you cover within your private practice is carrier screening. What does a typical patient look like when they come in? What kind of session follows with carrier screening?
So that's something that's really evolved over the course of time where, you know, when I started doing this, you would kind of separate people into, okay, are they of Jewish ancestry? Are they African-American? Are they Mediterranean? And you'd really kind of focus on diseases that are specific in those conditions and offer them testing. Now with some of the companies that are out there, you can really kind of test a broad spectrum of genetic conditions. So when people are coming in the door now, a lot of the testing really revolves around testing for what's common to their ethnic background, as well as a bunch of other conditions. You know, the individuals of childbearing age really are of the generation of more information is better than less information. And so they really prefer to do these larger panels that look at many different conditions, even though some of them may be relatively rare.
And if patients are kind of interested in getting genetic counseling and they're deciding between going to a private practice, going to a hospital, going, you know, through direct consumer and having a genetic counselor on that end, can you kind of highlight the advantage of patients seeing a genetic counselor like at a private practice versus those other venues?
You know, I don't know that there's really a huge difference in terms of whether you're going to see somebody in a private practice or go to a local hospital or a large academic center. You know, again, before we had things in place like the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act and the Affordable Care Act, and even before HIPAA, I think people really had strong concerns about the risk of some sort of genetic discrimination based on undergoing a genetic test. And with a lot of these laws, I don't think this is as much of a concern anymore. So, you know, I could see private practice potentially being appealing, you know, 15 years ago, where maybe somebody can come in and have all of their information kept completely separate from their typical medical record. But like I said, I don't think that's a huge issue anymore. And you know, the private practice may really be for people who don't want to wait 3 or 4 or 5 months for an appointment. You know, as I'm sure you're well aware, and some of your listeners are, you know, genetics is really such a subspecialized field. It's a field that's constantly growing, but we really need more genetic counselors out there in the community seeing patients. And so some of the hospitals can have longer wait times because they have a good number of patients that need to be seen. So in terms of kind of the hospital versus the private practice, sometimes those of us that are in private practice can see patients a little bit faster than in the community hospital or academic hospital setting.
And one of the issues with not having enough genetic counselors is not having enough schools. We do not have that many. I want to throw out the number. I'm not completely sure, but like around 35 programs in North America. But it's just not enough to produce enough genetic counselors that are in demand. And acceptance rates for each of those are very low when you look at other types of master's programs. I know you work at Northwestern. Do you see this being a problem while you're involved with graduate school of not being able to accept more or having people that want to pursue genetic counseling to find a school that they can go to?
It definitely is. And I believe that the program directors are really working hard to increase the number of students that they're accepting. So I went to the Northwestern program. When I graduated, there were 6 people in my class, and Northwestern on average was taking about 6 people per year. That was 2002. This year, the Northwestern program took 20 students.
Wow.
They've really made a concerted effort to bring more students in, get more of the genetic counselors in the Chicago area involved with the program so that they can take more students, have more sites for rotations. So there's definitely a big push amongst the program directors to start increasing that, because they're obviously, everybody's well aware of this issue. And, what I've been reading recently, it looks like that Florida is going to open 2 new genetic counseling programs, and I just saw that the University of Connecticut, I believe we're the area that you're in, they are going to have a genetic counseling program soon. So to actually see 3 programs open up within the next year or so is actually pretty amazing. I realize that's a small number, but you know, we maybe see 1 program every couple of years, and now we're going to have potentially 3 in the next year or two.
Just another stat to show how rapidly expanding genetic counseling is.
Yep, absolutely.
So from your experience of being in different kind of roles in genetic counseling in the field, how is it different being in a private practice? Specifically, you know, for students that are listening that are interested in genetic counseling and kind of dabbling in each area, kind of tasting where they want to go, what's your perspective of being in a private practice?
Well, you get to be the boss.
No, that is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, the biggest, I think one of the biggest differences is that, you know, most genetic counselors end up working either with a group of genetic counselors or there's a physician or two that they're working under. And so in private practice, I think once you have a good amount of experience, you have this ability to kind of go out and in essence really kind of be your own boss, see these patients, make medical management recommendations based on guidelines. And, you know, there's a certain sense of, when you work with physicians, you kind of know, you kind of may feel like, look, I got the information. I know what the patient needs. And, you know, sometimes the physician's there to, you know, be able to bill for the consultation, or they may go in the room and kind of repeat some of what you just said. And being in private practice, you're just really able to do a lot of this on your own, which, you know, I think as a healthcare provider, most healthcare providers have the ability to go out and work out on their own. And, you know, for some of the billing issues that come up with genetics, we really haven't been able to do that. And so I really feel like with the way medicine is going and how genetics is really getting integrated into all aspects, we really should be treated like any other healthcare provider, where we should be able to see patients on our own, that we don't necessarily have to work with a physician. Or, you know, we can work with a private group of genetic counselor settings where we can bounce ideas and cases off each other. So that's kind of the exciting aspect of it.
When you were starting your private practice, and still today, because it's a newer private practice, have you faced obstacles?
Yes. So the biggest obstacle is are the insurance companies. Many of the insurance companies, while they're aware of what genetic counselors do, they haven't had genetic counselors bill on their own or really just be a independent practitioner. And so they're not quite sure what to do with us. And even the companies that require it, so companies like Cigna and United, they still don't actually want to contract with an independent genetic counselor. This is the biggest problem that I'm coming into. And, you know, I'm really, this is a learning process for me as I'm going through this. I mean, I knew this was going to be a little bit of a battle, but I didn't really realize kind of the number of potential obstacles where, you know, for instance, I recently talked to a local insurer and they said, well, look, there's not much we can do. You need to talk to the Illinois Department of Insurance because they're the ones that really kind of say, you know, who we can accept contracts from and who we can't, which, you know, that I was not aware of. So, you know, this insurance thing is really ultimately, I think that the biggest obstacle that we face in trying to do this, because obviously the vast majority of patients have insurance, they want to be able to use their insurance when they come in, they want it to be in network. And that is one of the limitations of my private practice, is that most of the work that I do is going to be considered out of network or not even billable to some insurance companies.
And certainly that will change with time and how insurance companies are looking at private practices as the field kind of develops further.
Absolutely. And really, I think the way to kind of bring the insurance companies up to speed is to actually have more genetic counselors kind of go out there starting on their own and really asking the question of them, well, look, you know, why can't you contract with me? How do we work together to get this done?
You're certainly a trailblazer in the field of having a private practice and a role model for those that are interested in doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. I may be the fool doing the fool's errand, but we'll certainly find out with time.
Well, I want to remind our listeners or let them know, if they haven't heard before, that if they want to find a genetic counselor in their area, if they aren't in the Chicago area, they can go to nsgc.org, and there's a search feature on there that allows you to locate a genetic counselor near you or genetic counselors that conduct phone interviews if there's not one very close to you. And I really want to thank you, Scott, for coming on the show today and sharing with us about genetic counseling and direct consumer testing and your perspective on private practice.
Well, Kara, again, I really want to thank you for the invitation, and it's been a lot of fun speaking with you today.
I want to let our listeners also know that you can follow Scott on Twitter at Chicago Genetics, and also chicagogenetics.com is where he can be found online. So it's pretty easy to remember. Chicago Genetics. Done.
Done.
Done. If people want to look into the show a little bit further, listen to more episodes, learn a little bit more about genetic counseling, they can go to dnapodcast.com. It is a brand new website, so be sure to check it out. It's not my old one. It's brand new. And on Twitter, at dnapodcast. Any questions can be sent in to info@dnapodcast.com for me or Scott. I'll forward any along to him. And thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys, and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.